Welcome to our summer series about kingdom living at the Scenic Hills Church of Christ in Pensacola, Florida. The seventh lesson from the Sermon on the Mount is being presented by Brother Wayne Rogers from the Gulf Breeze Church of Christ in Gulf Breeze, Florida. His text is from Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 42, about retaliation. And now, Brother Rogers.
Thankful for the congregation here. I know that especially when you look at a summer series, and if you've been here for those other lessons, what has been put together by way of a study looking at the Sermon on the Mount itself is quite impressive, I would say. When you spend time, and of course you could read through the Sermon on the Mount in a matter of minutes, but when you spend time and you dig into it and you find out what Jesus is talking about and you see a little bit of the background and you understand what's taking place and you start putting it all together, there is a very meaty sermon, you might say. And so what Jesus is covering in this, I think is very impressive. And so I know that you've benefited from that study, and I pray that tonight will be the same as well. In Matthew chapter 5, 38 beginning down through verse 42, it is dealing with the subject of retaliation. And when I looked at my options as far as lessons to speak on, this was not really the one. I think I had two options at that point. I was a little bit later, I think, in choosing, or either everybody else jumped on it really quick or something. But as I was looking at it, I was like, either talking about vows or talking about retaliation. Those were the two options. And so I don't know which one was more difficult, but I know this is a pretty difficult subject to deal with. And I think especially when you begin to think about what the Sermon on the Mount really is about, it's about living a righteous life. And as Jesus is teaching those, especially of the Jewish community and their background, obviously, in the Law of Moses and those things that are taking place, and you have groups of people on either side of the Jews. You have the Pharisees as well as the Sadducees, and then you have others as well that are kind of scattered in amongst those groups as well. But you have a great deal of things going on in the background, and when Jesus is talking about basically learning to live with a heart of righteousness, then what's going to have to happen is they're going to have to change the way they're thinking. And that's what Jesus is trying to do, is to change the way they're living by change the way that they're thinking. And really that is the heart of the Sermon on the Mount, is how they're thinking and that approach to righteousness. And I think that's true when you think about living the life of a Christian today. I think it's very vital to understand these principles that are taught in the Sermon on the Mount. And I'm sure it's the case that you can imagine a situation where words have been spoken or a situation has taken place that is at the very least concerning to us, might even be somewhat insulting to us or to someone else, and you see that situation begin to escalate, to move from words being exchanged to violence. And I don't have to tell us, I really hate to even bring it up, but all you have to do is turn on the TV, right? And you see situations that could be dealt with, where people could be discussing things, talking out things peacefully, and yet so many times they turn to violence. And it's this idea of retaliation that comes out. And Jesus is teaching against retaliation, obviously. But I want to set the stage for this, if I can. We serve a just God who shall administer judgment for people in uprightness. Psalm 9 and verse 8. We serve a just God who will administer judgment. And also in numerous other passages, we find out that God will be the one who will bring about vengeance. That's not our realm. That's not our area of expertise. Why? Because very likely we would not handle it in a just way as God, who is the epitome of justice, would do so. And so let's look together at Matthew 5. Let's notice all these verses together and then come back and we'll deal with them kind of one by one. You have heard that it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that you resist not evil. But whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn unto him the other also. If any man will sue thee at the law, take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain or two. Give to them that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Now let's notice these things together. Verse 38, he says, you've heard that it is said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Where does that even come from? Where do we find that? Anybody? Where do we come across that? That is in the Old Testament, right? We have numerous passages. In fact, if you want to write these down, I'll go through them. Exodus 21, 23 through 25, Leviticus 24, 20, and Deuteronomy 19, 17 through 21. Now, I want to go back and read these, and so I'll mention them again as I'm reading through them. But Exodus 21, 23 through 25, it says, but if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Then you have Leviticus 24 in verse 20, fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, as he has caused disfigurement of a man, so shall it be done to him. And then Deuteronomy 19, 17 through 21, because it gives kind of the whole picture. Not just that law itself, but some specifics concerning it. He says, then both men in the controversy, this is Deuteronomy 19, 17 through 21. Then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priest and the judges who serve in those days. And the judges shall make careful inquiry. And indeed, if the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as though he thought to have done to his brother. So you shall put away the evil from among you. And those who remain shall hear and fear, and hereafter they shall not again commit such evil among you. Your eye shall not pity, life shall be for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Now, I think it's important to notice those first two passages, Exodus and both Leviticus. We just kind of cover the point, an eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth, right? And it doesn't take a rocket scientist, right, to figure out what that means. And yet, when you read Deuteronomy, it begins there first with, you need to go before the judges. You need to go before the magistrates, before the high priest. They will be the ones who will hear this case and determine whether an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth should be the case. And so, understanding that, that's what the law said, that it had to be brought before the magistrates. It was never intended to be a personal thing. It was never intended to be an individual thing. And having that understanding, then why would Jesus even have to go to the point to say this? What does he tell us? You've heard that it was said, right? An eye for an eye. So he's referring back to the Old Testament, right? You've heard that it's been said. Why is he having to bring it up? Because the Jews had so misinterpreted and perverted those scriptures to the point that they were taking it upon themselves to take vengeance, to be both judge, jury, and executioner, if that's what it called for. And so it was never intended to be carried out on a personal, individual level, but applied by the appropriate judges. And so when Jesus deals with it as a judicial ruling, he's not against it. He doesn't say that it is unjust, but he is calling them out for their use of it. And he's teaching that if you're going to live a righteous life, then you don't need to be carrying out retaliation on your own. That's not your place. That's not for you to do. If there's a situation, then it's supposed to go before the court of the Jews. And there would be a determination made by a judge and then go from there. Now, so Christ is finding no fault with the ruling and with the law that as it's applied to magistrates. And he doesn't take it upon himself to repeal it, by the way. But he does make this point. And so instead of confining it to those magistrates where they were doing it on their own, he is rebuking them. I like what J.W. McGarvey wrote about this. He says, in every case of maiming under the Mosaic law, the guilty party was regularly tried in the courts and the penalty inflicted by the officers of the law. That's how it was established to be. That's how it was set up to be. And that's what was done. The injured party was not, however, required to prosecute, but was at liberty to decide if he saw proper to show mercy, declining to enact that ruling upon those individuals. Leviticus 19, verse 18, it says, you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself, for I am the Lord. Now that sounds familiar, doesn't it? And isn't that really what Jesus is teaching? He's teaching about relationships, isn't he? He's teaching about how we deal with one another. And how they were dealing with one another as Jews. And were they living righteous lives? No, they were living self-righteous lives, and it included taking retaliation upon others when someone had wronged them. They were seeking vengeance themselves rather than allowing the way that God has set it up for it to be done that way. Verse 39, but I tell you not to resist, he says, an evil person. But whoever slaps you, this is New King James, slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. That's interesting. Jesus is going to give us three examples. And they're all going to have to deal with this idea of retaliation, not retaliating. And the first one that he gives, well, what is a slap across the cheek? You might say in some way, well, that has the potential to injure someone, doesn't it? But it's really seen as what? Not so much as an injury, but more of a what? Insult. An insult, isn't it? And so when you look at this first example that he gives about someone coming along and slapping you on your right cheek, he says, give him the other one. Now, I know there's some guys in here, myself included, that doesn't go very well, does it? That's hard to even comprehend. If you can get close enough to even attempt a slap, right? But in the idea that we see both Jesus and the Apostle Paul who were slapped across their cheek, and it was done as an insult to them, wasn't it? Let's think about, and I like what H. Leo Bowles wrote in his commentary. He says, God had never taught that the spirit and practice of retaliation as the Jews were teaching and practicing it. Never the law of God for anyone who had lost an eye to turn around and knock out the eye of his enemy. And even in personal combat, if one had lost a tooth, that he could turn around and knock the tooth out of the guy that knocked his tooth out. He says, no such procedure was set out or laid out without judicial process. And so it did not permit personal vengeance. I think we go back to the first part of this verse. When it says, resist not evil. The King James says, resist not evil. Resist not him that is evil, the ASV says. I tell you not to resist an evil person, the New King James says. And I think that makes it a little more clear. The ASV, the New King James especially. King James leaves it a little bit confusing here. Resist not evil. And sometimes, though, the King James does that, and you can look in the original and you'll find an evil person really being referred to, or an evil one in that case. And it is in the original here. And so the ASV renders it, resist not him that is evil. Now, the one who is bringing about this evil is the one who is insulting, the one who would, and whether words or whether a slap across the face, we need to remember the Bible is not teaching contradictory doctrine. We are told, resist the devil, right? And he will flee from you. So this is not what he's talking about here. James 4 verse 7 teaches that. We are taught to resist the devil and he will flee from you. We're taught to reprove, or the same word, resist the works of darkness. Ephesians 4 and verse 11. We are taught to fight the good fight of faith. 1 Timothy 6:12. We're taught to denounce sin and error. Romans 6:17 and 18. But we are not to resist evil with evil, right? Or violence for violence. And the Bible teaches that over and over. Romans 12, 17. 1 Peter 2, 11 through 17. It's interesting because Peter, in that first letter, he's dealing with those that were scattered, those that were reminded that they were just pilgrims in a strange land, and they were here for a time, but they had difficult situations, many of them who worked in difficult situations. And there's no doubt with the great number of slaves that were in the Roman Empire, especially during the first century, that maybe even some of them that are being referred to were, in fact, slaves. And yet he's talking about even an evil employer that's going against you, that's abusing you, that's treating you bad, and all of those things. He says, do what? You need to live righteously. You need to still be a Christian first and foremost. And this is simply what Jesus is teaching, trying to remind us. So if he said, if one should slap you on the right cheek, give him the other one. And we see in 1 Kings 22, Lamentations 3, Matthew 26, John 18, you look at Jesus being slapped in those passages, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 20. It was a common insult. So, what are we not talking about? We're not talking about a situation that where we're having to deal with really self-defense here. We're talking about a situation where an insult has been given. And in this case, he specifically says a slap. And he says, give him the other side, let him slap that. And again, while that may be difficult for some of us especially to comprehend, the principle and the spirit that Jesus is trying to teach against retaliation is emphasized in his statement. Resist not him that is evil. There's nothing good going to come from that. That's what he's teaching. But rather, the good that could come about by you resisting that individual, resisting trying to pay him back, retaliate against him, the good that could come from that is he might see in you a different spirit, a different character. And isn't that what Jesus is trying to teach? That as Christians, we have a different character. We are different. We're supposed to live different, act different. And with this, in those situations, while difficult, yes, absolutely. But wouldn't you say that the more difficult the situation, and the more prominently that we respond as Christians should, the greater the opportunity for the biggest difference that could be made in the lives of those that may be trying to injure us or insult us in some way? And so that's what he's trying to get across here. In John 18, 23, Jesus is slapped by that officer at his trial and says, if I have spoken evil or bear false witness of the evil, but if well, in other words, if I've spoken well, why do you smite me? Why are you slapping me? Jesus asked. He didn't retaliate against the officer, but he did question him. So there may not be anything wrong with questioning. What did I do to deserve that? And then you think about the Apostle Paul, Acts 23, verses 1 through 5, gives this account. But he says, Paul was struck, you remember, at the high priest's command. And he replied back with this, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall. He says, for you sit to judge me after the law, and then you command me to be smitten contrary to the law. Again, Acts 23, verses 1 through 5. Paul didn't retaliate with physical force, but he did certainly question. And he did make a point about it concerning the law as well. And so then I think about 1 Peter chapter 2, and I want us to look at this together. 1 Peter chapter 2. You might remember earlier in this chapter, in verse 9, where Peter wrote, you're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people. The idea is we're a different people, right? Because we're Christians, we are a different people. We live different lives, not like the world. And so they look down to verse 21. For even hereunto were you called, he says, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow His steps. We should look to Christ. He is our example. We should follow His steps. That's what he says. What about Christ? What is it that is so different about Christ that made Him stand out in how they were mistreating Him? This is it. He did no sin, neither was guile found in His mouth, who when He was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously, who his own self bare our sins in his own body on the tree, that we being dead to sins should live unto righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. And he says, you were as the sheep going astray, but are now returned to the shepherd and bishop of your souls. Look at Jesus. Look at His example. He did no sin. Neither was guile found in His mouth. And yet, when they reviled against Him, when they came up and insulted Him, when they slapped Him, when they did all those things to Him, how did He respond? He didn't retaliate. He says, I commit those things to the one who judges righteously. So, okay, was Pilate judging righteous? Was the high priest judging righteously? No, I think he has someone else in mind, doesn't he? I think he has the Father in mind. The one who truly judges righteously. Now, make no mistake here that the general principle which he laid down for us is that we are not to resist evil, or the evil one, the one that is bringing evil against us, the one that is insulting us. Yet Christ did not intend to teach that we are to see our families hurt, to see them murdered, to see, or to be murdered ourselves without being allowed to defend them or ourselves. Again, he's not talking about self-defense here. He's talking about a situation. In fact, when you look at the life of Christ and His teaching, when He goes out and He's teaching in these various locations, and of course there are Jews there that begin to stir up the crowd against Him. You can read in John chapter 6 where they begin to do that. And He tells them on one occasion, you need to hush. You need to hush. You need to stop what you're doing. Because he could look out in the crowd that he was preaching to and that he was trying to teach, and he could see that there was this backbiting and there's carrying on out there, and they're talking about how can he say that we need to, eat his flesh and drink his blood, when it's talking about partaking of Christ in that way and following him. And so they were stirring up the crowd against him. And he tells them, he puts a stop to that. And yet this was the case most everywhere that he went. And when they talked about him, he didn't really make a big deal out of it, did he? I mean, really, he didn't. But yet if they spoke out against the Father, or if they spoke out against the kingdom, then that became something of that got his attention, didn't it? And he dealt with. But specific insults to him, he didn't really respond in the way that most of us often do. And so it's not at all Jesus' intention to teach that a father should sit by and just coolly while his family gets hurt or something like that. That's not at all what's being said here. This is about being insulted. In fact, he explains. He goes on to explain what he means by it. He's talking about this, and when we look down in verse 40, he's going to say, okay, well, in these situations, in these cases, and these are things that are of trivial nature. And so he says, you don't need to retaliate. And so we're taught against that. So it brings us to verse 40. If anyone wants to sue you or take away your tunic, the New King James says, your coat, the King James tells us, then let him have your cloak also. The tunic or the coat was the inner part of the garment, whereas the cloak was that outer part of the garment. Now, he says, if anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, well, let him have your cloak also. Now, this is the second of these three illustrations. And again, the overall principle of not retaliating is still here. Not giving in to vengeance ourselves. And so this, you might look at this as the second evil. That phrase going back, resist not evil. Resist not an evil one, in other words. And so now as the situation comes up, someone's brought you before the court and they're saying, I want his coat. I want his tunic. He says, well then, give him the cloak also. Now, especially when it came to individuals who were poor, they couldn't be made to give up their cloak. But that was the general rule. You could take their coat or their tunic, but not their cloak. But Jesus says, "You, what is he saying? Of course, the next thing is about going the second mile, right? So picture this same example with that same thought in mind, that same pattern in mind of how to respond. You go further. He wants to take your inner garment. Well, you give him the outer garment as well. And I look at this and I go, you know, it may be hard for us to understand. That's not typically, of course, that's not how we dress either. But understanding that Eastern culture and what was taking place here, this was, you need to have the right attitude. Someone, for whatever reason, has come against you before the magistrates and has said, I want your coat. I want your tunic. And he says, you go ahead and give him the cloak as well. And isn't it about a thought process? And of course, I think he uses three different examples from different areas, but how someone could be taken advantage of. This individual's brought before a court and basically being taken advantage of is what he's talking about. And he's saying, you go ahead and give him the cloak as well. Because what that's going to say is going to be greater than the harm or the insults or the inconvenience that's brought upon you. Because giving up one's cloak was an even greater degree of concession. And so what I hope that we're starting to notice is this, the attitude that we should have when it comes to these things, or being insulted, or being harmed or hurt in that fashion. Now, verse 41. He said, whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. And so that second mile principle that's here. This is the third illustration, yet it's the same idea about retaliating. Now, this custom first originated with the Persians. The Persian government, basically when a man was working for the government and traveling on government business, then he could come along and compel others to help carry some of his load, to help him with his burden as he was going about doing the government's business. And of course, then the Greeks came along and they took up that same custom. They actually put it into law. And finally, the Romans enlarged upon that and incorporated the principle into their law as well. And yet, unfair advantage was often taken of this law. And the Jews hated the Romans because of it. In fact, so often was the case. And by the way, a Roman mile was 1,680 yards. How many of those Jews who worked in their fields alongside or near a Roman road do you think had it in their mind where that mile would end? You think they went and marked it at some point in time? You think they probably have traveled it and had to pick up a Roman soldier's pack or something like that, or whatever he's carrying, and carry it, and he knew exactly how many steps it was, didn't he? And they hated the Romans because of it. Now let me ask you this question, and I think it's pertinent to the day, and to understand where we are today in our society, especially in this country. What has hatred ever really brought about in a good way? What has it really brought that was good by way of actions that were brought about by hatred? It typically doesn't end well, does it? And haven't we seen that in recent weeks and days and over the last year? So many acts of violence, they're not brought about by love, are they? They're brought about by hatred. So what is it that's going to make a difference in this world? It's by looking at these principles and not retaliating, maybe just because you've been insulted or just because you've been taken advantage of. And you think about what they're doing here. And then he says, even in verse 42, he says, "Give to him that asked you, from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." It's still in the context of retaliation. And this is not meant to say literally, give everything to anyone who asks for it all. There are obviously some constraints there. There are obviously some conditions and limitations there. In its context, as we look at the examples before, the way that we are able to benefit others, benevolently help others, that's going to go much further, especially than looking at someone who does have a need. They have a legitimate need, and we turn them away. Well, James talked about that. Be ye warmed and filled. That doesn't work, does it, when it comes to righteous living? And that's what Jesus is talking about here. And so those who would ask to borrow what we have the ability to loan, obviously, and they have a legitimate need, they should not be turned away. And we find that came straight out of the Old Testament as well, Deuteronomy 15, 8 through 10. And so Jesus is seeing that, and he's bringing forth some of that teaching, and he's talking about how they have misinterpreted the idea of retaliation. And he says, look, there was an oppressing nation against the Jews, right? The Romans. And so some of this came about by way of the Roman Empire. Some of this came about by their own countrymen taking advantage one of another. And that's what Peter covers in his letter. Yet you have to remember that we're just here for a little time, and we need to continue to live righteous lives before God, because that's going to make the ultimate difference before others. And that's what Jesus is trying to get across here. And so this idea, this obviously dealing with retaliation and not retaliating in these situations, we have to remember that a spirit and an attitude of love is going to go a lot farther to make a difference in someone's life. And you've maybe experienced that as well. Maybe someone who was hostile against you in some way, and with just a simple, nice gesture, their attitude was brought low. And so that you could talk with them. And the next time, maybe it wasn't such a bad ordeal to be able to be with that individual or to talk with that individual. Maybe we work with that individual. They see the Spirit of Christ living in you, and it makes a difference in their lives. That's what Jesus is talking about. And isn't that what we need in the world today? Last week, in response to so much of this violence that's going on, I was kind of racking my brain, just thinking, okay, as preachers do, well, what am I going to preach? What can I possibly say? And not really go into specifics, because I don't think that the specifics, we can all see what's going on out there and understand what's going on, at least to a certain degree, and yet to sit there and hash out one side or the other, and I may not understand either side well enough to be able to talk about it. But what I do know is that the thing that's going to change the world is the gospel. Not this party or that party. Not these individuals over here, or that individual over here. That's not really the answer. The answer is the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what makes the difference. And Jesus spent His time preparing those who would hear not just the Sermon on the Mount, but would hear so many more gospel sermons to come. How their lives should be different. How they should be living their lives. And you can see, especially by taking this and breaking it down as you have through this summer series, just looking at each of those sections and looking at the difference that it makes in people's lives. Look at the difference that it makes in those with whom we come in contact. That's the idea. That's where the difference is going to be made. It's where you and I are out there talking with folks, living righteous lives, faithful lives in the gospel, walking in the light, as we should be, for others to see and for others to experience Christ and what He taught and us living that in our lives. That's the difference. Now, we've got, I think, about 2 minutes left, so that's not a lot of time, but I, if you have a couple of comments you'd like to make as we begin to some closing thoughts.
This message has been brought to you by the Scenic Hills Church of Christ in Pensacola, Florida. For questions, comments, prayers, or Bible study, please call, mail, or email us, or visit us on the internet at scenichillschurchofchrist.org. God bless.